Welcome back to the Flag Mantle Podcast. I'm Stuart Sterling, your host of the show, and I'm here for another exciting episode of the podcast. We've had a lot go on this week. A lot of water has gone under the bridge over at Cockburn. We beat the Eagles on the weekend, 35-point winners, 110-75. So a nice 6-goal win. Josh Tracy signed on. Josh Draper is the rising star. What's happening with Liam Baker and Shea Bolton? And also, we've got 4 weeks to get ready for September. Starting off with a Saturday afternoon game against the Essendon Bombers at the MCG. We've got a lot to cover in this episode. So make sure to stay tuned here on the Flag Mantle Podcast. We're also on Boom Radio now, which, I mean, I'm just really thrilled to be on Boom Radio as well. So if you're listening to this overnight on Boom, hi, welcome to the show. Find me on Spotify. Find me on social media. I am everywhere. So without further ado, let's get into the Josh Tracy signing. Yes, he got signed. Let's get into it. Yes, that is right. We are here to talk about the man, the myth, the legend, the kahuna, Josh Tracy. Let's listen to him respond to a couple questions the club asked him about his contract extension, taking him through to 2030.
I can happily say that I've extended on to 2030.
Well, mate, it's great to have you, obviously, extending, but you're already contracted to 2026. I guess the obvious question is, why have you decided to extend on further?
The offer was there to hang on for a bit longer, and I thought it was clearly a no-brainer with the situation that the club is in and the way that I feel like the club's going to go.
Absolutely, mate. And you're one of now 5 players that have signed till 2029 or further. Obviously, like you sort of touched on, just all in on what the club's building.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's a little bit of, giving back to the club after what they gave me a few years ago in an opportunity. So I feel like if I can do my best to help repay not only the club, but the fans and everyone involved.
Yes, love that from Big Kahuna. He's really made his impression and his presence felt in 2024. He's already kicked the 42 goals, the big man. He is ranked elite marks, fantasy points, and set shot like percentage accuracy. I guess he's number one ranked in the competition for accuracy at shots on goal. He's also become one of the best contested marks going around the competition right now. He's exactly what the Fremantle Dockers needs, and Jai Amos is the perfect foil to Josh Tracy. Amos, he's had more scoring shots this year than he did last year when he kicked 41 goals for the season, and now we've got a second key forward really coming through the cracks. Josh Tracy has become just probably one of our top 5 players of the season. He is fundamentally one of the most important players on the field structurally and from a talent perspective. He clunks everything. He breaks packs. He just smashes through guys at times. I think there was a clip a couple weeks ago when we played, I think it was the Gold Coast Suns, where he ran through 2 guys to get the ball. And he didn't kick a goal from it, but it led to another player scoring. There's another one from the weekend where ball goes down there. He contests the ball one-on-one with his defender, brings it to ground. The defenders for the Eagles get their hands on it, and he lays a fantastic tackle after Tom Emmett does the same, and Emmett walks into an open goal. He's just the presence, the size, just everything about him is exactly what we've needed in our forward line since Matthew Pavlich. Now, I'm not saying Josh Tracy's going to become as good as Pavlich. Pavlich was so talented across every area on the ground, obviously a six-time All-Australian, being an All-Australian as a defender, forward, and a midfielder. Josh Tracy probably doesn't have that same capacity. However, he has spent some time in the ruck this year as the number two guy when either Jackson or Darcy are not playing. And even then, as a midfielder, he has some impact. He has a bit of extra impact in the ruck, especially around the ground. Center clearances, not so much, but around the ground at balls up and boundary throw-ins, he's been fantastic there as well. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the All-Australian squad towards the end of the year. His name will be in conversations. We've seen the videos from Fox Footy with Kane Corns and I think Matthew Lloyd's in there. There's a few others, members of the AFL media, ex-players. Eddie Betts was one of them, where they all get around and discuss the different teams. Who's in contention? Who's a lock? Who's sort of on the outside looking in? And I think Josh Tracy, second half of the year, he just has to be in that conversation now. Whether or not he makes it's probably a different conversation, but he has definitely earned the right to be in the All-Australian squad of 40. And he's got a big game this weekend playing the Essendon Bombers. Obviously, Matt Taberner used to get the chocolates against the defence of Essendon in years gone past, famously kicking six on the deck at Marvel. Yeah, so I think Josh Tracy, he's due for a big game. I mean, he has big games every week, kicks his two or three, or maybe even four, sets a few guys up, and I reckon he's due for a six, seven, maybe an eight-goal game. And we'll see if that happens this weekend, because we do like to share the load up forward with Amos and Nev and Tom Emmett, not Josh Emmett. That is a UFC fighter. Tom Emmett and Sonny Walters, who's not playing at the moment. Sam Sturt's looking good. Bailey Banfield's playing a bit more wing at the moment with, now Nat Fyfe is gone, but Matt Johnson wasn't playing and we needed a bit more support on the wing, so Bailey Banfield's in there. We've just got a really nice mix, and I think Josh Tracy, as the spearhead of that group, is going to be very dangerous for years to come. And we just look at the numbers. As a 21-year-old, he's already ranked elite in a few areas and above average in the rest. He's someone the AFL needs to look out for, because he's the traditional lead-up forward. He's a fantastic kick. His patterns with Amos and Jackson down there are fantastic. They're no longer getting in each other's way the same way Lobb and Taberner used to do, and Jesse Hogan as well. They are clearing out the forward line and getting good looks because of it. And Josh Tracy is the man at the helm who organizes all of it and is the spearhead. So I'm looking forward to Josh Tracy being in our team until 2030. It does raise the question, is the looming Tasmania team the catalyst for all these mega contract extensions? We've seen Connor Nash get one, we've seen Josh Tracy get one, and we're going to see possibly Tom Barras get one, not at West Coast. I'm assuming it's going to be at the Bulldogs or the Hawks at the moment. But these teams are avoiding players coming out of contract for the first couple of years that Tasmania are coming into the league. You want your list in a good spot, and I think Fremantle, we already have five players contracted for 2029 and beyond on our list. And I think we're setting ourselves up nicely to, you know, have a nice list by the time Tasmania comes in. Andy Brayshaw's the one that I think I'm most nervous about right now. He's contracted through the end of 2025. Bailey Banfield's another one. He's contracted through the end of 2024. We have offered him a deal. He has not taken one yet. There was some interest around him a couple of years back from North Melbourne, and I could see Bailey Banfield possibly wanting an out maybe get a bit more of a financial incentive elsewhere. And I know Julia Edwards, his girlfriend, is, or his fiance rather, they did get engaged a couple months ago, but I do see that playing a bit of a factor here as well. Does she want to stay in Perth? Does she want to travel? What's good for her career? Because I think Bailey is the ultimate family man at the end of the day, and I think he's going to follow Julia wherever she heads. So watches out on Bailey Banfield, and I'm growing a little bit nervous about Andy Brayshaw, especially with the Saints having all this money and him being a pre-agent right now. But the good news is Josh Tracy is here to stay. Now, let's talk about another key position player, but down the other end of the field, it's going to be Josh Draper. Stick around for that on the Flag Mantle podcast. That is right. We're talking about Josh Draper here. He won the round 20 Rising Star, and he racked up 18 disposals and 4 marks for the Fremantle Dockers against the West Coast Eagles. Now, a lot of people are saying this is overdue. He had a much better final quarter against the Swans all those weeks back, where he single-handedly took out Hayden McLean and set up the forward attack for the Fremantle Dockers. However, he was able to get the Rising Star nod against the West Coast Eagles. Let's listen to him on AFL 360 with Kath Lachlan and Mark Robinson.
Hey guys, how are you?
Thank you for having me on. It's our pleasure to have you on. Where do we find you? I believe you're at Pinjarra Football Club?
Yes, right now currently I'm in Pinjarra doing a club visit, just giving back to the kids.
Good on you. Can you believe now that you're going back to footy clubs as an AFL player and now a Rising Star nominee?
Nah, I remember when I was a kid, we had some players that came down, and I still remember it to this day. So, it's just crazy how life goes in a full circle.
When you first started playing, Josh, and you thought, wow, have a look at this, this is quick and this is stuff, what is the one thing you thought, I've really got to get a handle on this really quickly if I'm going to survive in the senior team?
Yeah, probably just the speed of the game. Naturally, I've got like good composure, but just like the fast play and like the forwards, just chasing the forwards up and down the ground. I really had to improve my running as well. So that was one of the things.
Well, you've been amazing in stepping up when the likes of Brennan Cox have been injured, Alex Pearce. I mean, how helpful have they been? And I know Luke Ryan's been a bit of a mentor for you too. How helpful have they been in your development in this year, first year?
Yeah, they've been pivotal in my development. In my first year, I was just watching clips of Alex Pearce, Brennan Cox and Lucky Ryan. And then just out on the training track, they just helped me with my body work and just with my confidence as well. And we got a good set of key backs. We also got Oscar McDonald that's played a lot of footy as well. And he's really helpful with my development as well.
When you were 12 years of age, who did you think you wanted to play like?
I wanted to play like Nick Natanui. He just brings so much excitement to the game with his athleticism. I used to play ruck as well. So, that was someone I used to look up to.
So when I watch you play, you do attack the ball and back yourself. Is it difficult to work out and the mistakes you make when you might attack too much when you should defend and when you should defend and you might attack?
Yeah, well, I guess I'm still trying to find that balance. The coaching staff at Frio want me to keep attacking and just to go for the ball. And and they really backed me in to do that. And if I make a mistake with the right intent, so be it. But I'm just going to keep attacking the ball and, just keep being confident out there.
What about the stresses of playing on some of the game's best forwards and in important games like that last quarter at the SCG where you just kept your composure, Josh?
Yeah, I just see it as a good learning opportunity for me just to get all this exposure early in my career. I'm learning each game and getting better each game. So I think playing on those quality forwards is going to make me better in the long run.
Name a player when you went and stood on him this year, you thought to yourself, my God, I'm standing
what
next to
here?
Who?
Yeah, wow. It probably would have to be Charlie Kerno. I remember just watching him just kick bags. And, when I was just starting on him in the cage, I was like, wow, like, this is so surreal. Like, I'm actually on Charlie Kerno. So, and he's one of the, if not, he's, like, the best forward in the comp at the moment. So, it was surreal.
Welcome to the big time, Josh Draper. It's been a pleasure watching
well done,
you this
buddy.
Year. All the best.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, welcome to the big time, Josh Draper. He is becoming a vital cog in the Fremantle back seven, replacing Alex Pearce and Brennan Cox for their long-term injuries. And he stood up quite well. I've been really, really impressed with his composure and his ability to win one-on-one contests. For sure, he is part of the long-term future of the Fremantle Dockers. And he also serves as an example of the NGA, the Next Generation Academy process, working in full effect. Now, behind the break, we are getting to Fremantle's interest in Shea Bolton and Liam Baker. Up next on the Flagmantle podcast. Yes, welcome back to the Flagmantle podcast. Nothing's changed. Stuart Sterling is still your host. That's me. And we are talking about all the trade goss that has been going on with the Fremantle Dockers. Now, Liam Baker, he did meet with Caleb Sarong and Andy Brayshaw not too long ago. And even more recently, Shea Bolton is very open to exploring a move west. And the Fremantle Dockers are leading the chase. Sorry, West Coast fans, it looks like we're getting both Baker and Bolton, if that can be accommodated for. Let's listen to Cal Toomey on Gettable on Shea Bolton heading to Fremantle.
Shea Bolton, well, Freo's still chasing him, and he wants to get back to Western Australia. He will pursue this. 4 years to run on his deal, but the Tigers...
4 years?
Yeah, the Tigers, again, are in control of this one. But the Dockers have picks. It comes down to this big call. Do you do it now while the club that he might want to get to has the selections to appease, and is that appealing enough to make it happen? And how deep do you cut? That's still a watch for me.
Yeah, very good question there from Cal Toomey. How deep do you cut? What do we do here? Because Liam Baker and Shea Bolton is probably worthy of two first-round picks plus, maybe even three. And we do have three first-round picks heading into this draft. My only concern would be the rule the AFL have that clubs need to take two first-round picks every 4 years. Now, we didn't take one last year. Cooper Simpson was our first pick in the second round. And then you go back to the Luke Jackson trade. He cost us our first round pick that year as well. So that means we need to take a first round pick this year. So what does the trade look like? Well, we've got two picks. We've got Port Adelaide, Collingwood, and our own. So we got two from other clubs and one of our own picks, which means I think if we're going to get this done, we're going to need to trade away some future assets, which almost shuts the door on Chad Warner coming to the Dockers. So it's what do you value? What do you value at the trade table? How much are these picks worth? Is Chad Warner even worth the gamble? Is he going to leave? And, you know, maybe he's more suited to a West Coast. Shea Bolton definitely fills a need up forward. Michael Walters is going to be retiring very, very soon. We do need one of these small forwards. I've been saying it for a very long time. If we had a Tom Papley in our team, we would be almost unstoppable. It's whether or not he can buy into the system, become a pressure forward, become creative, just sort of build into the Fremantle culture of playing for success. We're not playing to become better. We're not playing to win accolades or to sign massive deals. Those are all things that come with success. And Fremantle are a team that they haven't hit it. They are process driven. They love the grind and they love to win. Shea Bolton, will he fit into that? Not sure, but he definitely has a place in our best 23. Liam Baker, the same. I can see him being used in a variety of roles. We do need another winger. Is Liam Baker that type? Or is he more of a half-back? He could take Wagner's role, who did just re-sign, by the way. He's got a two-year extension. Does he take that spot in the back line? Or does it become another connector up forward to help her transition movement? Or even, does it become a midfielder? You've got so many options with Liam Baker. And then Shea Bolton, oh, pardon me, but Shea Bolton becomes the ultimate small forward for us. I think he could just add so much creativity, so much flair, all the stuff we've been missing since Walters has kind of taken a dip in form because of his age. I think Shea Bolton would fit perfectly at the Dockers. So let me know what you think. Head on over to my Instagram at Flagmantle Podcast, also at Boom Radio AU. Let me know what you think about that potential deal. I would say keeper first pick, because there's a guy I really like by the name of Sam Lehler. He's sort of a half-forward, mid-hybrid that is a real connector, a real impact player, explosive away from stoppages, great overhead. I think we could use Collingwood's pick for that. They currently have pick 7, or we currently have pick 7 by Collingwood. The other two in the teens you could trade away, move our future first away, 3 first-round picks out the door for Baker and Bolton, plus you're getting a top 10 kid in the country. And some sources are saying Lehler's probably one of the more talented players in this pool, so we could be getting a top 5 talent at pick number 7. And then you add on the 2 incoming recruits, and I think it's time we add a bit of age, a bit of experience, and a bit of quality into our team through the trade period. I think this is the ultimate opportunity to do so. So Fremantle fans, if our season ends prematurely and we don't win a flag, do not stress. The off-season is going to be full of fantastic and interesting things going on. So make sure to stay tuned during the off-season. We're still going to be running this pod there. There's going to be so much to talk about. And of course, we're going to be doing the preview and review of the West Coast game and then the Essendon game. So stick around here on the Fremantle Podcast. Welcome back to the Flagmantle Podcast. You're joined by your host, Stuart Sterling, and I am here to wrap up the 35-point win against the Eagles and then looking forward to the Essendon Bombers. The Fremantle Dockers eventually got a hold of the West Coast Eagles after trailing at quarter time and half time. The Dockers, they started slow. The Eagles came out to play as this is their grand final. And you can tell when you watch these derbies, both these games this year, the Eagles have added a bit more, I could say, emotion to these games, a bit more. They're more fierce, they're more ready to play, they're really, really tough to play in these derbies, and I think that's what you want as a neutral fan of football. However, they did give us a big scare. They gave us a really, really big scare in the first half, but eventually the boys backed the system, they backed their numbers, they backed their fitness, and they got it done. The Ross Glendening Adelin medalist is Caleb Sarong. He had another huge game. He racked up 32 disposals, kicked a goal, 2 marks, 2 tackles, 8 inside 50s, 10 clearances, and 12 score involvements. He was absolutely massive. And yeah, I honestly could not take my eyes off Sarong. He was doing everything right this game. Equally, Andy Brayshaw and his matchup with Harley Reid. I think Brayshaw took the chocolates there with 36 and a goal, 14 score involvements from Andy, 7 inside 50s, and 5 clearances. So Harley beat him at the source, but Brayshaw beat him around the ground. I also wanted to talk about Josh Tracy. Was held really quiet in the first half from Harry Edwards, who played a fantastic first half. However, Tracy broke the game open in the second half, kicking 3 goals, 2 from 11 touches, 5 marks, 3 of them contested. He spent 90% of his time on the ground. And I think Josh Tracy very well earned that deal, especially in the second half that game. But over the course of the whole season, he's kicked 42 goals, and I think he's in the teens for behind. He's just an absolute sharpshooter. He missed a sitter that he probably should have had. But other than that, I think he played the perfect second half. Another one, Michael Frederick got off the chain. Brady Hoff has been locking up small forwards all year. Michael Frederick is the first one to really get him good. Kicked three goals himself, Michael Frederick. Just a quiet three goals, to be honest. Came from eight touches. Tom Emmett, the same, a quiet three goals from six touches, but his pressure was absolutely astounding, highlighted by that play between Josh Tracy and Tom Emmett in the second half, where they both laid massive tackles. He's just a super physical player. He went back to the Waffle for a few weeks, and he really, really found himself and redeveloped himself as a player, and he's come out more offensive. He's got a few more tricks in his bag, and he just looks ready to go for this last little stretch heading into September. Michael Walters is going to have a really, really tough job getting that position back, but overall, I'm just really impressed with how the Eagles came out as well. I don't think many people were expecting them to have such an incredible first half, but hats off to Jared Schofield and the West Coast Eagles. Even if it's just for 1 week, being able to pump the boys up, get them all fired up, and start some melees. We had, I think it was 18 or 19 different infractions this game, including one suspension to Nat Fyfe, one to Petrocelli, and one to someone else from the Eagles. They had two suspensions anyway, but Harley Reid, I think, was the source of it. He looked like a bit of an arrogant ass. Looked a little bit Jason Horn Francy in there. So Eagles fans, I would be really careful with how you treat this young kid, especially the West. I don't think they've done a good job of handling, you know, a budding superstar over here in WA. I wouldn't be surprised if we went back home. I know there's going to be massive offers on the table from the likes of Collingwood, Essendon, St Kilda, Geelong, even Richmond. But whether or not he takes those offers is a completely different story. I don't think he will, at least not this year. I think he's got plenty of time at West Coast. We're going to see who the new coach is. I reckon if there's a time for Harley Reid to make a decision, it's 12 months from now when he's had a full year of the next coach. See how that sort of plays out and whether or not that's going to be positive for him moving forward. But this is not a West Coast podcast. This is a Fremantle Dockers podcast. I'm very proud of the way we stood up in the second half. You could see us start flicking the ball around, start trusting our teammates again. And that's the style we want to play. We're a high handball team. We run through the corridor, move it with our hands. It's very Bulldogs-esque from 2016, kind of Richmond-esque from that when they had the Mosquito Fleet forward line and they just ran and carried that ball all the way up the field. That's exactly what our playstyle sort of is. And another guy I want to mention here is Hayden Young. Now, he's ranked the number one player in the competition over the last 6 weeks, and he's only had one game with 25 disposals or more. That ranking is done by Champion Data, by the way, so don't get mad at me for that ranking. It's Champion Data, but it does suggest to me that he is our most damaging player, and going into September, we can 100% almost a guarantee that teams are going to want to tag him, especially the defensive-minded coaches. I think Sam Mitchell, if we play the Hawks, he would look to tag. Luke Beveridge would look to tag. So many of the top eight teams would look to tag Hayden Young. And maybe that's when we can use him more as a forward. Get Matt Johnson. Nat Fyfe will be back. Jono will be back. Just get some other prime movers through the midfield. Make it really dynamic, which I think Justin Longmuir has done a fantastic job of this year, rotating guys through the middle. We've had Switkowski, Aish went there on the weekend, coming in as the sub. O'Meara has the capacity to do that as well. Jordan Clark's played really, really high halfback when opposition teams have flooded stoppages. So maybe he could have a look as a midfielder as well. So we just have so many different options rotating through that midfield mix now that I think we can be comfortable enough going, hey, if you're going to take out Hayden Young, we can play him forward and he's going to be really damaging there as well. But let's get to the Essendon Bombers. They're on a slide at the moment. They spent the majority of the season in the top two, and they suddenly find themselves on the outside looking in. What does that mean for the Bombers? Well, it means that this is a do-or-die clash for them. They're going to bring out everything that they can to get over the top of the interstate club Fremantle at the MCG. We don't go to the MCG a lot. We haven't played the Bombers at the MCG in a very long time. I think it's something like 20 years, something like that, where we haven't played the Bombers at the MCG. It always seems to be at Marvel for whatever reason. I think it's got to do with ticketing and stuff like that. But yeah, the Bombers need to get back on track ASAP. Thank God they're on such a slide, because the fans are not going to be showing up. They're not going to be getting any extra motivation, any extra energy. There's no 19th man for the Bombers at the MCG. That stadium is going to be dead empty, and it's time for the Dockers to get another massive win to secure our final spot. This is it. If we can win this week against the Essendon Bombers, I think count us in for finals. Absolutely count us in for finals. If we can win this, we are a lock. And then I think we probably need to win another two from there out of Geelong, GWS and Port Adelaide to maintain a spot in the top four. However, I think our best shot at a premiership comes from inside the top two. If we can get a home qualifying final at Optus Stadium, we're going to be very hard to beat. If we win that first week, then we go over to the prelims where we have another home final, which means 3 weeks on the road. Not on the road, at home, and then we go on the road to the MCG. So if we're any chance at all at a flag, we almost need to go 4 from 4. And I was listening to the Champion Data guy, as you can probably tell, last night, and he was suggesting that teams that do really, really well in the final 8 rounds of the season, they're the ones that are the flag contenders. They ruled out Sydney, they ruled out Carlton, as they've already lost enough games to put them out of the premiership picture historically. So Fremantle and Brisbane and the Bulldogs and Hawthorn are the four teams to watch. So I'm just saying, if we go pretty well over these last 4 weeks, we are within the reach of our first premiership cup. But oh, that's all to come. And so that wraps up this episode of the Flag Mantle podcast. I've been Stuart Sterling, and I'm currently getting kicked out of the booth. But, gee, if we just win these next four, we're going to be fine. I almost guarantee it. And I think we can. I think we can. Starting this week. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Flag Mantle podcast. If you have made it this far, please leave us a review on whatever streaming site you use to access the Flag Mantle podcast. And don't forget, we've got social media too, over at the Flag Mantle podcast on Instagram and X. So go follow us there, send us a cheeky DM, and you might get a response. We'll see. Thank you for listening once again, and I'll see you all next time.